Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome in to RNIB Tech Talk. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Fantastic to be with you once again. Don't forget, Tech Talk, it's our chance to gather around each week and explore the world of technology from a blind or low vision perspective. How's it going for you? We'd love to know. You can drop us an email or voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K, @rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, well, it's still technology conference season around these parts, and we'll be bringing you stories from the recent RNIB Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference in Glasgow, and we'll also be catching up with some more bits and bobs from the CSUN Assistive Technology Conference in California with contributions from Google, Meta, and Be My Eyes. Joining us, our co-hosts this week are Hubert Bavalkovic, Callum Stoneman, and Natalie Curran. Welcome in to you all. Fantastic to be back. And we will, of course, be talking a bit more about those conferences as we go through the show today. But let's just find out what else is on your minds. Hubert.
Well, it's a small bit of news and maybe not so much unexpected. Google Assistant is going, slowly being phased out, being replaced with, of course, Gemini, slowly happening on Pixel phones and on Android. Probably it will be interesting to see how far this goes with like Google smart speakers. But yes, Google Assistant is being phased out in favour of Gemini.
Are you using Gemini at all, Hubert?
I've not used it as much as its other kind of competitors, to be honest. So I need to dabble more in Gemini, to be honest, to do some comparisons. I've not used it much yet, but I've heard positive things about it, but equally, you know, it kind of does the same thing as all the other really similar products, so it's kind of tricky to hear what makes it stand out compared to others.
I was reading about the Pixel 9a, which is Google's sort of entry-level Pixel phone that has, you know, Gemini support built in there, competing with the iPhone 16e. Seems to be offering a little bit more battery for a slightly more affordable price. And I think the Gemini experience, for me at least, he says at the time of recording, I don't know, I'm just finding it a little bit smoother than the Apple intelligence. Be interested to hear other thoughts on that. Callum, what's new with you?
So there was a software update out for the Meta Ray-Bans this week, or at least mine did the update this week. And one of the new features is, well, I think the only new feature on there is support for Audible. So you can connect Audible to your glasses the same way you can with Spotify and Apple Music and all those kind of services, and say to the assistant, hey, Meta, play such and such a book from Audible, and you can do commands like previous chapter, next chapter. All sounds really good. Can anyone guess the catch?
It's not available in the UK.
Yeah, US only.
Ah, there you are.
Now, I haven't gone down the route of a VPN and seeing if that works. I'm not going down that rabbit hole, to be honest, because even if it does work, if look and tell is anything to go by, then if it works today, then who knows if it will still work tomorrow. I mean, I imagine they're less sensitive about Audible support than they are over look and tell because of data regulation and stuff. But mileage may vary with a VPN. I haven't tried it. But yeah, if you're in the US and you're into your audiobooks and you want to make it easier to listen to Audible on your glasses, then in the connected apps in your app, you should find it there, I imagine.
At RNIB's Inclusive Design for Sustainability conference in Glasgow, we asked Meta this very question, right? And it was in a public forum, so I don't think I'm sharing any state secrets. Meta were asked, look, when is this stuff going to be fully, particularly the look and tell, you know, when is that going to be fully available on those Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses in the UK? And they said it's definitely coming, absolutely it's coming, but they would not commit to a date.
Yeah, they didn't want to commit to. No. It is going to happen, but they really didn't want to commit to anything. Even, and again, look, if they told us something off air, we wouldn't be able to say it anyway. But even off air, they, you know, off record, they didn't want to commit to anything. But it will happen. They've reassured us of that.
Mm, there we are. Natalie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, what's grabbing your attention from the world of technology this time?
Nothing as exciting as Meta Ray-Ban updates, but I have discovered a new shortcut on Outlook. So if you're scheduling a meeting, I didn't know how to find other people's availability when doing it on the desktop app, but now you can. So if you, I say now you can, now I can, it's probably been there for a long time. Once you've filled in the details of who you want to be there and maybe even put in a suggested date and time, because I think that helps, you can then press Alt then X. I think it's Alt then X as opposed to Alt and X together. And it will take you to sort of calendar type view. And if you've set your meeting to be half an hour, you can then use the arrow keys to go up and down in half an hour increments. And it will tell you like who's available and from your meeting invite at those times, which is really useful. I would say, though, I find it a bit faffy to get back to the sort of description section, if you like, of the meeting. So I would do that first and then, you know, go to the time view. Once you've selected it, you just press Alt-S to send. Not super exciting, but I'm enjoying it. It's definitely made my life easier because I used to sort of set up a meeting in the Outlook mobile app. I found that easier to see people's availability and then switch over if I needed to write a really long description.
I'm doing quite a bit of Outlook mobile actually on iOS, and for the most part, it's all right. I do find sometimes I get fairly erratic behavior when composing a message. Sometimes the focus jumps around or it doesn't read the whole thing. But those productivity tips, Natalie, so important. So if you have any more of those, we'd love to hear them. You can drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, with your productivity tips, keyboard shortcuts, how to get things done a little bit more efficiently. Always good to hear. Well, Hubert, Callum, Natalie, welcome in. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio at CSUN 2025, and it is a huge honour to be with Hans Weiberg, who is the founder of the phenomenally popular Be My Eyes service, which is touching the lives of hundreds of thousands of blind people around the world. Hans, congratulations, you are celebrating 10 years since you founded Be My Eyes. Did you ever imagine all those years ago what Be My Eyes would become?
No. it's like a dream. And to be honest, of course, coming from a small country like Denmark, you have to think globally from the beginning. But I had not imagined that we will be here with 800,000 blind and low vision people downloading Be My Eyes and more than 8 million volunteers. That is just totally amazing. That's more people than we as citizens in Denmark. So it is mind-blowing. So yeah.
Indeed, if Be My Eyes were a country, it would be bigger than Denmark. That's right, phenomenal thing.
And it will be the most friendly because everybody wants to help. So,
Indeed. And you're working with some incredible partners as well.
Maybe the thing people has been talking most about is our partnership with OpenAI, where you now can take a photo and get a description, but also our latest partnership with Meta around their Meta glasses, which we are super excited about, because now you can have both hands free, and that can be very, very helpful when you are in the kitchen or you have something in both hands that where you need both hands to do something. And the fact that you can just say, hey, Meta, and then say, be my eyes, and then we will connect you to a volunteer. That is so convenient and easy to do. And also, the glasses in itself, you can say, hey, Meta, take a picture, and then they will take a picture. And you can say, hey, Meta, take a picture, and send to, and then it will actually send it to someone. So it is the glasses are very amazing to use, and so so helpful, absolutely.
That's been the big change, hasn't it, in the last year, I think, since we're all familiar with the idea of using Be My Eyes as an app on your smartphone that you're obviously holding in your hand, that since the smart glasses have really started to make an appearance, now we're able to use Be My Eyes hands-free.
Exactly, yeah. And that is, as you say, you can do the same thing with the phone, but it makes a huge difference when you have both hands-free. Also, it is a lot easier to kind of point the phone or the glasses in the right direction when they are sitting on your face, because you have a more natural way of doing it, because you're kind of always pointing the head the right direction, so to speak. It makes a huge difference.
And it's not just the Meta glasses, is it? Obviously, the Meta Ray-Bans are very popular, talked about quite a lot, and a number of us are using Be My Eyes hands-free on the Meta Ray-Bans, but they're not the only smart glasses to support Be My Eyes.
We are not available on any other glasses, but we are aware that there's a number of other glasses out there, and we are open to conversations with other glasses as well. The mission of Be My Eyes is to be a free service to our users, and I totally realize that the Meta glasses are not free, but they are among the cheapest out there, and that's why we really like to work with Meta, because it is a consumer product, and you can buy them for, I think it is $300, and that is the cheapest we have been able to find that really works. And is supported by a huge company, so you can kind of rely that they will also be around next year and so on. But that's why we are so happy about being able to work with a company like Meta, because they have the power to really support this.
And Hans, what have been some of the most memorable examples of where Be My Eyes has made a huge impact in the lives of a blind or partially sighted person over the last 10 years?
Well, we have a ton of histories, but yesterday a guy came up to me here at CSUN, and he was telling me that he was using Be My Eyes to do 3D printing. So he was, and I was completely blown away, and he showed me something he had printed totally on his own. So he has created this thing on the computer screen, and volunteers had helped him. Hey, now it looked like this, and you need to have something here and something there, and then he had done that, and then there's a whole process that I cannot explain that he went through with the help from AI and from volunteers and so on, and then he could hit print, and then he actually had the thing in his hand. I was completely blown away by how patient he must have been, but also just having the nerve to do that. And that's kind of one of my favorite stories now. So
I've heard about people building, you know, IKEA furniture and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, just extraordinary. You know, doing things like gardening. Troubleshooting, you know, exactly. DIY tasks, things like that. It's so so liberating.
But it is always fun to talk about the exceptional stuff. But for me, the fact that you can have a pair of eyes within 10 to 20 seconds and see if it is expiry dates or whatever you're looking for, that is the most important, and what makes me happy, that we can help people on the spot while they are doing something, so they don't have to wait for somebody else to come around or think about who should I FaceTime now or something. You can simply just hit the button and then you have a volunteer. That's the purpose and what makes me proud about Be My Eyes. So yeah.
And you do have safeguards in place to avoid, you know, any kind of risks of bad actors and things like that, because there are volunteers at the end of the day and they do want to help. And I've never had a bad experience. I've never heard about anyone having a bad experience, to be honest, but I know that I get asked at the end of the call, did you have a good call? You know, and I always answer that. But you do have systems in place to make sure that your users are protected.
If you have a bad experience, you can report that, and then we will go back and review the call and see what happened and why did it not work out. But I can tell you, I don't think we have suspended 10 volunteers. The people who sometimes get suspended is sighted school kids who signed up as blind people and pretend to be blind and make kind of a prank call or something like that. That's basically the only issue we have. And then of course sometimes people will show a body part they shouldn't show and they get suspended immediately. But otherwise it's a very safe space to be in. But of course you always have to be careful, and you should not show your credit card to strangers or ask about important medicine or something like that. If you need help with such thing, you should, if it is something you do on a regular basis, you can create a group of friends and family within the Be My Eyes app, where you, if you need more personal information that you should not talk to a stranger about, then you can create a group to do those kind of tasks. That's super important.
So in addition to the volunteer service and the AI service, you also have your directory of specialist providers, including RNIB.
Yes, and that is how we can keep Be My Eyes as a free service for every blind person in the whole world. Because when you call, say, Microsoft, then we route the call to the call center at Microsoft. And the good thing about that is that then they know it's a blind person because the call is coming from Be My Eyes, so they can make sure that those agents who actually know what a screen reader is and so on, they get those calls. Some of the agents at Microsoft, they have had more than 10,000 calls. I mean, they know before you call them, they know what you're going to ask them, because they do this all day long. And then, because Microsoft is so happy about this, they are willing to pay Be My Eye a monthly subscription to be on the Be My Eyes platform. Sometimes we joke about that one of the smallest companies in the world, they have some of the biggest companies as their customers, because we have Google, Microsoft, Spotify, LinkedIn, Procter & Gamble, and RNIB, and Hilton Hotels, and a number of other companies that you can contact in our service directory. And that is how we can, as I mentioned, keep Be My Eyes as a free service, which is the mission of Be My Eyes, to make the world more accessible.
How are you celebrating your 10 years?
Well, we did get some champagne and had a little party and so on, but then it is back to business. So. Mm-hmm. But it is, it's important that you kind of stop for a moment and think about, hey, whoa, we actually got this far, and we are now dealing with companies that you can only dream about having relationship with, like Meta and all these companies. So it's kind of fun, but it is super important that you kind of stop once in a while and really think through, hey, we actually got this far. So that's how we did it.
Well, we cannot wait to see what you do next, but congratulations on 10 years of Be My Eyes, and on behalf of all the blind and partially sighted people in the United Kingdom who've ever used Be My Eyes to get something done, to feel more independent, I just want to offer you the most profound gratitude and thank you so much for you and your team and all your partners and all the hard work that you do to deliver such an incredible service. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we could not do this without RNIB and other blindness organizations, because we don't speak all the languages, so we rely on people telling each other about it, but also local blindness organizations who help us spread the word about Be My Eyes. People in Japan and Russia and all over the place are using Be My Eyes, and we don't know those languages. So it is so important that we have local people who support us and talk about that they can use this resource. So thank you so much for doing that.
Hans, founder of Be My Eyes, it's been a real privilege. Thank you for joining me on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
My name is Agustin Mehta. I'm based in California, the United States, and I work at Meta, leading a team called Concept Engineering. I'm the director for the group, and our charter is building early prototypes, new concepts, and new ideas for our wearables devices group within Reality Labs.
Can we talk about the product most people have been talking about in the blind and partially sighted community when it comes to Meta over the last year, and it's the Meta Ray-Ban glasses that are pretty much everywhere at the moment. Can you give us a brief description as to what they are, first of all?
Sure. I mean, this is a product I'm extremely passionate about. My own journey in this space is a bit personal. My mom is blind. I have some vision issues of my own, as does my son and a few other family members. Throughout my career, I've tried to find areas where I can apply the tech stack I work on in a way that can help connect people, regardless of their background or their physical abilities. There's a project I worked on at Microsoft called Seeing AI a number of years back that I think many in the blind and living community are familiar with. I had a pleasure of contributing a bit to that. And when I joined Meta, there was a nascent project to build smart glasses. Again, I had the luck of being able to work on that a bit, and I really wanted to apply some of that same energy that I had done in Cass's career to use AI to help people who are visually impaired. So first and foremost, the glasses we're shipping are eyewear. I think we made a really good decision in partnering with EssilorLuxottica and making something that was industrial designed to look good and feel good and be attractive eyewear first, as opposed to tech first. I think tech forward is turning people off. The glasses enable you to capture moments in your life that are exciting through pictures and video. They enable you to capture audio as well as listen to audio discreetly, but with high quality. It doesn't cover your ears up, but it sends the sound pretty close to just your ears so that others generally cannot hear it.
Now, one of the big points about these glasses is that they have become very popular in the blind and partially sighted community because, you know, people can have hands-free communication using services like WhatsApp and Messenger. People can ask AI various questions and get information and, you know, capture video content and do video calls without worrying which direction to point the camera. When they were being designed, did you expect at any stage for them to be this popular with the blind and partially sighted community, for whom it wasn't specifically designed for, but yet has become almost an essential tool in some people's toolboxes?
Me personally, yes. That's what attracted me to be in the group. From the company's standpoint, the initial product description and product requirements were not centered on accessibility, and they still aren't. They're marketed as a mainstream device. This is an aspect which I think is unique to companies like Meta, which, at least in the parlance of U.S. tech companies, we call a bottoms-up organization. That's in contrast to the more traditional corporate structure, which is tops-down. What I mean by that is other places I've worked, for example, Apple and more traditional companies, direction comes from leadership. Product vision is fed from your management chain downward. If you have a great idea, oh, maybe you can feed it around, but ultimately you do what your boss tells you to do. Historically, Meta, and previously when it was still Facebook, is much more of a grounds-up type of culture. So engineers across the company are encouraged to put together hackathon projects, and that comes from the earliest days of the company. Many of the biggest features that we've shipped, even historically, like the Messenger product, the news feed, they were built out of side hackathon projects that weren't for things that someone's manager told them to do. So I bring up this segue because when we were early in on the development of the Ray-Ban Stories glasses, myself and a number of other members of the team created a bunch of hackathon projects and concepts around leveraging this form factor and compute stack to help blind and low vision users. We did demonstrations of using optical character recognition to read things. We did demonstrations of using AI to describe and read the world to the user. And all the aspects you mentioned about the glasses being the perfect form factor, the cameras pointing in the direction you're looking, your hands being free so you can operate a cane or use a guide dog, or you can just do whatever you want with your hands. The sound being private and discreet as opposed to using VoiceOver on an iPhone with speakerphone on, but not covering up the ears as traditional headphones would, thus giving you all the spatial audio cues of the real world, which are so critical to navigation and orientation and effective mobility. From the company's standpoint, the initial pitch for the product was not one as an accessible device, but even from the early stage of the project, there has been grassroots efforts among engineers who are passionate about this topic to build these feature sets in. And I think that's why it's been so effective, because we've had early demonstrations of all the features that our blind and low vision users love.
Has the popularity of the glasses within the blind and partially sighted community influenced Meta's current work on the future of the product?
Yes, I think it's inspired our leadership. Many of the messages that internally, you know, a couple people like myself have been giving, they land well. Of course, the message speaks for itself, but actually seeing that hypothesis verified by users loving the project has encouraged our leadership. There's also a concept called the curb cuts, which I'm sure you're familiar with in accessible design. The idea being that the traditional curb cuts in a city plan were initially put there to enable people in wheelchairs to have mobility and access to sidewalks. But they actually benefit everybody. If you ever used a stroller, I guess you call it a pram here, or a shopping cart, trolley, you can navigate better. Subtitles and closed captioning are another great example of this that were initially developed and designed for people who are deaf and hard of hearing, but are widely used by everybody, regardless of disability or not. And I think that concept is becoming very apparent to our leadership, because a user interface that enables somebody to operate without vision is a good user interface in general, because you don't always want to demand that the user have their eyes glued to your screen.
And one of the particular standout features with the glasses, which I've heard a lot of people mention, well, two technically, but they're quite similar, is the Meta kind of look at the Meta AI look and tell features and the live video that I've seen in action on various videos. Can you talk a bit about how they work?
Those are some of the features I'm most excited about. And so you've probably been following the general trend in technology space of leveraging LLM-based AI technologies to describe images in more recently video. Our tech stack works by taking images on the Ray-Ban glasses and feeding them through our cloud to our AI models in order to describe and to produce information about the world. Today, these features are available in regions that we've rolled out and are comfortable as a company in shipping, that ensuring we're in compliance with local regulations. So it's not rolled out everywhere in the world yet. I'm very confident that that will that expand and our footprint will expand very shortly. The sorts of things that LLMs are very good at are describing features that they've been trained upon by our users. So the sorts of things that a person might care about, like, you know, how many people are in front of me? What does this sign say? Is the scene in front of me light or dark? What color are these clothes? What type of currency is in front of me? Those are all things that AI today is very suitable at doing. One very powerful technology that's actually been around for a while and is separate from the AI stuff is optical character recognition, or OCR. So that's been fairly good for quite some time, and there have been products on the market that can retest. But marrying that with AI is, I think, extremely powerful, because when you're able to take the text out of a scene, but then intelligently understand the way it's laid out, for example, on a restaurant menu, you now have a situation where a person previously might have just been reading raw text in a big, huge paragraph that doesn't make any sense, and now it can be organized in the same structure that a sighted person would organize if they're reading it aloud. I think that we're going to see similar sorts of innovation in digesting web content. I think screen readers are going to get a lot better at understanding the intent of the designer instead of just reading things out loud. I think that the need for things like alt text on the web is going to decrease as AI models are able to automate it.
Tell us a bit about the live Meta AI, the live video feature.
There's a limited amount I can talk about because it's not shipping everywhere yet. It's an early access product, but essentially the live AI feature enables the user to capture video over an extended period of time, as well as capture audio cues. It's a multimodal AI, and have a natural live conversation with the AI agent. So, for example, in a session right now, if I were using the live AI agent, I could be conversing with you and then perhaps ask, you know, what brand of microphone and camera that you're using, and it would possibly give you the answer to it. And where it's really powerful is I might ask, hey, when I walked over earlier to get water, you know, what type of water was it? Was it sparkling or still? And it would be able to remember that stuff and tell me, and potentially even help me navigate to find which bottle is the proper one that I wanted. So being able to remember extant things, I think is super powerful. Essentially, the dream for me, and I think we're not too far off from it, is providing descriptive video for the real world that's dynamically created. So as you know today, like, there's descriptive video available for select titles on major media platforms like Netflix, but it's dependent upon a human narrator. I believe we're already at the point where static video could be post-processed and have description generated, and you're going to start seeing that more. But the feature you're describing that we're on the cusp of is going to provide that live for the real world, which I think is extremely powerful.
And can you tell us how important it is to collaborate with companies such as Be My Eyes, who are also available on the Meta glasses with the cool A Volunteer feature?
Yeah, that collaboration's been amazing. I think part of the power of that collaboration is that Be My Eyes, first and foremost, is an organization and company focused on building for the community. And so even though at Meta, of course, we have a strong inclination to serve that community, partnering with a company that's got it like front and center, it helps inform us to make sure we're making designs and issues that make sense. The initial collaboration that we've released, which is, as you said, the call and volunteer feature, is super powerful on glasses for all the reasons that you mentioned earlier. Hands-free, the camera's pointed the way your face is pointed, the audio is discreet. It's just, I think, head and shoulders better than doing it on a phone. Perspective of folks at Be My Eyes, particularly blind and low vision folks on the team, has also been really impactful and powerful because it's called into our attention things that might not have been top of mind for our leadership, right? Simple things like, you know, having a user interface that doesn't demand vision. I mean, on paper, everybody knows that, but in practice, having a blind and low vision user try the thing out is extremely powerful. It gets really fast feedback to where Ruby is seen and where it's gone. So I'm looking forward to continued collaboration with them as well as other organizations.
Fantastic. And if people would like to find out more about the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, I mean, we can try them here at your stand too, but where else can people go if they are not at the conference today?
Sure, yeah. So there are some Meta stores sprinkled around the world, as well as SLR Luxottica Ray-Ban stores where folks can try out the device. So the Ray-Ban stores, I know in the United States, many of them have live demo stations, which is extremely exciting. I believe that's the case globally as well, although I don't have up-to-date details on all the locations. They're also available through optical shops. So the beauty of the existing portfolio that we have today is that you can buy them with shades. You can also purchase them with a prescription. And if you purchase just the frames alone, you can have your optician fit prescription. Is the industrial design is the same as the Ray-Ban Wayfarer headliner styles that Ray-Ban has shipped previous to making smart glasses. So that's, I think, one of the really great aspects of this product is that it's a mainstream device and it's not a tech-forward gadget.
Fantastic. Augustia Meta, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're with RNIB Connect Radio at CSUN 2025, and I'm with Alan Decker, who is an accessibility specialist with Solar Grove, who make the Envoy Connect, which is a highly portable, high-quality, lightweight audiobook player that will soon be available from RNIB. But Alan, the reason I've come to talk with you is that you're also showing your next generation device. Why don't you tell listeners all about that?
Yes, well, thank you. So this is called the Vine C2 Recorder. So it is our first easy-to-use recording device that has a talking menu. So a user can record appointments, contact information, notes easily with a speaking menu to guide them through the recorder. So I'll just turn this on real quick. So it announced that the recorder was on.
Nice British English female voice there as well, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we can actually change folders easily. So we can press the next folder over. Contacts, appointments. So if we wanted to record an appointment, we just simply tap the record button. So it announced recording has started. So it's recording. When you're finished, you tap record again. The recording has ended, and it has gone to play pause, so we can tap play to preview our recording.
So it announced recording has started.
So I'll just pause that. So you can record like we did using the external microphone. You can also record through earbuds with a line-in microphone as well for a more private recording.
I'm delighted that you're developing this product. We're often at RNIB asked for a very easy to use, high quality voice recorder. And it sounds like this might be that solution.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
And so what we're hearing there, of course, is the internal speaker, which is competing with a lot of background noise here at the exhibition. Presumably you can plug headphones in there as well.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. And just remind listeners about the charging and battery and how that all works.
Yeah, so there's a couple ways to charge it. So this model has the new Type-C connector. So you can connect this to power to charge quickly. It takes about an hour and 30 minutes to have a full charge. There's also a built-in solar panel on the back. So you can place this in a well-lit area. And with each hour of sunlight that it receives, it gets about 2 hours of charge time. And the player can hold up to about 20 to 25 hours of charge capacity.
Fantastic. And then what about those recordings then? How much can you record on there?
Yeah, so it has an 8 GB internal recording. The files are recorded in an Opus format. So we can hold thousands of hours of audio recordings on the internal. And there's also a micro SD port so that can expand up to 128 gigabytes.
And are you able to offload those recordings to another device if you wanted to copy them onto a computer or something else?
Yes, you can. So you can connect this with the Type-C connector to your PC. It will show up like you plugged in a flash drive, so you can easily pull out those recordings from each of the different folders. You can also connect it to the Type-C connector to load music or books as well. So very similar to the Envoy Connect, that is the book reader model only. This device has that same internal feature, so you can play books, music, podcast, anything that is in audio.
And not that I'm suggesting anyone try this, but the Solar Grove devices are quite rugged, really. You can, you know, drop them, and because they're so lightweight, they're probably going to be okay.
Absolutely. That is one of the features of Solar Grove is its durability. So it's shockproof, it's weather resistant, it's resistant to extreme heat, extreme cold. So it's going to handle any environment.
What do you expect to be the timeline on this? Is this available now or is this something for the future?
So it launched in November. So we are moving now. We've signed up several distributors in the US and we're looking forward to working with more, including RNIB.
Excellent, excellent. And of course, the key thing about your devices is that they are very tactile. The buttons have got a very distinctive shape so that you can find and feel them by touch. They've got a little bit of travel there as well when you press them, which gives you confidence as a user. And of course, they are designed to be fully accessible, so all those menu prompts are spoken as well.
Yes, yes. Well, that's one of the things we have spent a lot of time on, is passing out earlier models for feedback, because we wanted to make the tactile keypad universal. So somebody in the US, somebody in the UK, somebody in the Middle East can easily identify the buttons, and it's not language specific. So very, very tactile.
Brilliant. Well, Alan, I really appreciate you taking time out to speak with us today. Anyone interested to learn more about products from Solar Grove, how do we find your website?
Yeah, you just go to sgrove.com. That's just sgrove.com.
Excellent. Alan Decker, Accessibility Specialist with Solar Grove. Thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
All right, thank you.
Now, we've been in the thick of technology conference season in the last couple of weeks. We've all been out and about and recording content and meeting technology developers and getting hands-on with some new kit. So I thought it'd be a fantastic opportunity for us to just kind of go around the room and compare notes, really, about anything that you've encountered at one of these technology conferences. Natalie, let me come to you first. Was it your first time at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability conference?
Yes, it was. And RNIB threw me in at the deep end because I was on one of the panels. But it was really good, and it was amazing to see some new tech and to hear what's been developing in more detail.
Was there anything in particular that grabbed your attention?
Yeah, I couldn't believe how far the driverless cars have come on. So there was a talk from a representative from Waymo, and obviously I've heard of driverless cars. I don't think anybody here is not. But I didn't realise that they were in circulation and so widely. So they're in four American cities. I think they said LA, San Francisco, Phoenix, Arizona, and Austin, Texas. And I thought they were still very much in development stage, but no, people are using them, getting in them. They sound fab.
Do you want one?
I can't lie. The convenience of being able to jump in a car does really appeal. You know, it's hard when even, you know, going to your local shops is a bit of a trek. So it's definitely something I'd consider if it ever made its way to the UK.
Oh, I want one. 100%. I would use that.
So on that theme then of independent travel and mobility, Hubert, what did Caesar make of the robot guide dog?
I think he gave him quite a bizarre, like, I think I spoke to someone. I said, can you describe Caesar's facial expression when we brought Robbie to him? And someone said, well, I think he's raising his eyebrows at it. I don't think he was overly that impressed. When I was testing Robbie, someone else was holding Caesar. And as soon as I walked off with Robbie, Caesar was pulling the person who was looking after him towards me, kind of going, no, this is my job to do, not his. And then we decided to race with Robbie. And if you follow us on social media, at RNIB Radio and RNIB Connect Radio on Facebook, you'll be able to watch the video where Robbie speeds off and Caesar just about tries to catch up and doesn't look overly that impressed when he was taken over by Robbie, it seems.
At CSUN, I got to try the latest iteration of Glide. This is the... It's been described as a bit like a vacuum cleaner. The device that's capturing a lot of people's attention though, right? People are putting deposits down for Glide, really believing in the work that Amos Miller and the team are doing there. It's got slightly chunkier wheels now, a bit more kind of traction, I think, with the wheels. There are a couple of cameras, one pointing slightly down that is intended to detect steps down and drop-offs and that kind of thing. I took it for a little bit of a spin around the exhibition area. I think I might have brushed one person with it. It essentially kind of pushes you away from obstacles. So when you are when you try to walk into a wall or a table or something like that, it'll try and steer you away from that. I'm still a little bit concerned about, you know, what happens when you have to go up a flight of steps or you're in and out of trains and taxis and maybe, you know, going off road and up the hills. But I think, you know, where some of these robotic solutions may work well, and I guess it's sort of true for some of the driverless cars, is where there's a bit more control over the environment and the space. You know, you're not necessarily just kind of going out in the wild with these things. So
I also spoke to the guys at RoboDog, And I had a similar thought. They would have, you know, like, because I said to them, well, Robbie the dog is guiding me where to go. And we all know with a sort of normal guide dog, you're the one in charge. Obviously, it helps look after you. But you're the one deciding where you're going. But I think the use case that really jumped out to me for something like that is a shopping centres, where you could go to a shopping centre, sort of pick one up, as it were, and, you know, program into or tell it, okay, I want to go to H&M, Tesco's, Boots, whatever it is, and it will guide you in that sense. And to me, that sounded something really useful and something I'd actually use, because I don't know how everybody else feels, but I find shopping centres can be really difficult.
Or even a hospital environment. You know, if you've got to go to a particular clinic and you get to one of these huge hospitals and you've got to walk down how many corridors, you know, and use the lift, that perhaps in that situation, if somebody just sort of handed you, you know, Glide or Robbie or something like that and said, right, okay, this device is going to take you to your appointment, to the room that, where you need to be, I can imagine it working quite well in that scenario.
I think a lot of sighted people would like it in that scenario.
Yeah, right. And how did you find everyone getting round the conferences themselves? Like, you know, in Scotland, how did you find getting round the venue?
I found it pretty good. I did get quite a lot of sighted help, and they were good for that. I mean, obviously, we were with the rest of the Connect Radio team, and some of those are sighted, so they were helping me out. And I did notice that all of the stands apparently had Navilens codes on them. And I tried this out of interest because R&IB, I know they've kind of gone all in on Navilens in the Grimaldi building. And I thought, oh, I wonder if there's any in use on here. And I didn't realise, going off topic from the conference slightly, but I just thought this was funny. I didn't realise that all R&IB staff had Navilens codes on their ID badges, or at least some of them. Because I tried it out while Howell Davies was sat in front of me doing his show. And opened up Navilens. I thought, I'll just move it around, see what's here. And it opened up Navilens. And first it said R&IB Connect Radio, which was our stand. And then I moved it a bit more and it said Howell Davies. I thought, oh, what's going on there?
There you are. Neil Barnfather was there from Good Maps. And
it was fantastic.
Yeah, and at CSUN they actually had a Good Maps deployment, is that the right word? Where you could use Good Maps to get around the venue. And quite a few people reporting positive experiences with that. I would like more Braille labels at exhibition stands. You know, Amazon did this at CSUN and it worked really well. So they had all their, you know, their Echo products and speakers and tablets and glasses. We'll come on to glasses in a second. And there were Braille labels at the front edge of the stand, so you knew exactly which product you were near and what you were going to find. And I just found that really quite liberating for me, just being able to independently work my way along the stand and know exactly which product it was that I was reviewing. But even just for the name of the company, right? You know, because there's always that thing of where you go to a table and you sort of say, oh, which stand is this? You know, and then suddenly you're kind of locked in then for a 20-minute demo, which you might not want. So
I quite like that, because you don't then have to take your phone out and wave it around to check. You can just use your hand, find the Braille label, read what it is. It's a small thing, but makes quite a bit of a difference.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
So on the glasses then, at CSUN I encountered a couple of different options. There was a guy walking around with something called Tammy. So he was from Lighthouse Tech in Switzerland. These are glasses that will have three haptic zones. They're intended to help you avoid head height obstacles. And goodness knows some of us have got a few, scars in that department where you get, you know, low hanging things. And they will vibrate, essentially, either on the left or the right or in the centre when you get near to an obstacle. They've been in development for about 5 years and €1,500 to you, sir. So a little bit on the pricier end. But the one that really seemed to have the most promise was from a company called Agiga, A-G-I-G-A. And these are more like $500. And they feel quite, you know, sort of stylish, you know, a bit more like the Ray-Bans. And they have a whole range of options on there. I thought the speakers were a little bit easier to hear on those as well. Sometimes with the Ray-Bans, you know, in very noisy environments, the speakers can be a little bit tricky. Have you found that when you're in a, you know, train station and there's a lot of background noise, it can be difficult. So yeah, definitely things are warming up in that kind of smart glasses area.
Was that the Echo Vision?
Yes.
The Agiga ones.
Yeah, that's right.
I've heard quite a lot about them. Yeah, and they do sound promising. I think the Meta Ray-Bans or the like, if the Ray-Bans become more open, or the Echo Vision are the ones that are the two that kind of sound the most promising to me. They're the ones that I'm looking forward to. I do worry though that not that these companies, you know, don't have a place, but I do worry that a mainstream solution is kind of gonna maybe get there first. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Celeste for a long time, and then what seemed to happen is that the Meta Ray-Bans came out, and then Celeste, it's all been pretty quiet, really. No one seems to know what's going on with them.
Yeah, I've not heard anything new from Celeste.
And I just hope that these specialist companies don't end up similar.
Well, you know, it's always that sort of age-old argument. Of course, we want mainstream products to be as accessible and as productive and as useful as possible. But sometimes when you've got a small dedicated team working on a specialist product, they're able to do things that are just probably not going to happen anytime soon in the mainstream, you know. And I guess that's bringing us neatly on to something like Braille technology, right? Because mainstream hardware manufacturers are unlikely to make a Braille display, you know, at a kind of a mainstream price. They're always going to be a little bit more expensive because it's specialist hardware. They've got to use specialist tooling. Dot, who are making the technology that's in the Monarch, were at CSUN and at the conference in Glasgow. Did anybody get hands on with the Dot Pad?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so I was saying a couple of weeks ago that I've not had a chance to get hands-on with any of these multi-line displays. So I jumped at the chance when I saw that the Dot Pad was there. And it's cool. It's so the Dot Pad is the one where you've got like your standard 40-cell Braille display at the bottom, and then you've got some control keys, and then you've got towards the kind of the top of the display is the bit that does either multi-line Braille or it does graphics. And they were talking to me about, they were saying, for example, if you connect your iPhone to it, you can it will actually show the Braille on the bottom half and show the icons on the top half. So you'll actually be able to see the icons. And of course, I said, oh, I've got to try this out. Have you got anything available? They said, yeah, go for it. Connect your phone up. So I connected my phone to it. That was really simple. Just connected it up in VoiceOver settings like any other Bluetooth Braille display. And sure enough, yeah, I only tried it out for a couple of minutes because there was other people waiting, but I had had a flick through my home screen, and on the bottom half you had your usual, you know, text of FaceTime, calendar, messages, whatever else. And then on the top of it there was there was all the icons, which was just, I've never seen those icons before. And I know it's only a small thing, but just having them appear and you could feel it changing under your fingers as you moved. I think you're supposed to lift your fingers off for a second on the Dot Pad, but it did refresh with mine. Maybe I was just had a bit of a gentle touch with it, I don't know. But it works really well. And I was saying to the people on the stand, like when I was in school, for example, I mean, science, I completely failed it. And part of the reason was that I wasn't very good at it. But the other thing was that the teacher that I had, particularly in my final year, just couldn't get his head around the fact that you can't send kind of 50 diagrams and a load of Braille for a lesson with 10 minutes notice and expect it all to be done. So if you could bring those diagrams up almost on the fly, that's that is pretty game changing, and I've actually got a chance to see how that works.
Yeah, so Dot unveiling their new generation of their pin technology, the D3 actuator, is the one now where you don't need to lift your fingers off the display in the way that you used to. So that's an important and encouraging development. Also from CSUN, there was a couple of other Braille things. I went to a few presentations. Arizona State University are working on a low-cost Braille device. They were talking about $200. And I tried really hard in the nicest possible way to sort of gently remind them, you know, we have been here before. We all want them to succeed. But it is an gnarly problem to solve. And, of course, the bill of materials is not necessarily indicative of the price of the final product, right? Because you've still got to find packaging and training and support and marketing and software and all the other things that you need to make a Braille product work. So we'll be following that one with great interest. I also went to a presentation by another Natalie, actually, Natalie Martin-Yellow from Montreal. And she is a researcher and has been investigating the impact of line length on reading speed, and confirming sort of what we already know, that those very small Braille displays, you know, the kind of the 14 cell type Braille displays, are a little bit slower when it comes to reading. I mean, you might have one for other reasons, right? Portability being the obvious thing. And of course, the price is a little bit lower as well. But when it purely on, you know, reading fluency, you are better off with a 40 cell.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you tried, any of you ever tried the Page Connect?
Mm. Do you want to just describe that, Natalie, for anyone who's not encountered it?
Yeah, so I came across Page Connect at Braille and Focus event back in November, I think it was last year. And I really, really liked it. Not necessarily personally, but what I liked about it so much was it was relatively affordable. I think it was a couple hundred pounds, but it used technology that most of us, if you're a Braille user, will have, or at least have when learning. And what it is it takes a Perkins Brailler, and what you do, or get somebody else to do, but I think it's relatively easy to do, is you remove the base of the Perkins Brailler and you screw on this Page Connect base. And what it does is you then can link it up to, the demonstration was with a laptop, but I'm sure you could do it with other devices as well. And when you type with on the Perkins Brailler, when you type and you're creating your hard copy Braille, the base at the bottom is picking up on that and is doing a live transcription on the laptop or device that you've got connected to it. And I really, really liked it. It has got the slight drawback of, you know, if you make a mistake and you need to go back and edit it, it can maybe skew things off a wee bit. But like I said, I really like the fact, instead of trying to create something entirely new and fix, you know, come up with the same problem from yet another angle, they took something that we already have in existence and adapted it. And then equally, even if you don't want to spend £200 on the special base, I think they have made their software free. So even if somebody wants to learn how to use Braille on a standard QWERTY keyboard, they can do. It's not advisable if you're an actual Braillist, but maybe, you know, for support staff or something who don't have a Perkins Braille at home, they can still log into the software and use that for free. So I was very taken with that.
And I think Paige, you're also working on a low-cost portable Braille embosser. So just to kind of wrap up as well, these conferences are not just about hardware and software, but also about standards. APH and DAISY unveiled the eBraille specification, which is going to help with navigation around Braille files and reflowing of Braille content. And the BBC at CSUN were presenting some work that they've been doing to develop guidelines to make TVs more accessible. So looking forward to learning more about that as it evolves. Excellent. Well, if you've been out and about or you've heard something else or you've got a question about any of these technology conferences, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Natalie, Callum, thank you very much.
We're here at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference at the Glasgow Science Centre, and I'm pleased to be joined by NM Dayton, who is the lead of Google's internal disability standards. So thanks very much for joining me. You're going to be doing one of the speeches a little bit later, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Myself and my colleagues will be talking about Google's efforts with co-design with different disability populations, as well as Google's accessibility offerings across various products and what's new and what we've been working on lately.
And could you give us a little sneak peek? What have you been working on?
Something that's really exciting to me is an app called Lookout. So Lookout is an Android app that allows folks with sight loss to identify things in their surroundings, to read different labels. There's features within it that allow guided selfies. There's an awesome feature called Guided Frame, which allows you, it'll basically give vocalized instructions to make sure that your face is centered when you're taking a selfie, to make sure the objects that you're trying to capture in a photo are within the frame. Lots of really cool offerings in the mobile space. And we'll also be discussing some improvements with our flagship products. So things like Google Workspace, Gmail, Docs, Drive, Google Wallet, guided instructions, walking instructions as well, vocally. Lots of really cool things we've been working on.
So sounds like you're covering all bases.
Absolutely.
Now, one of my colleagues who is blind, I had to ask you about the current situation with Gemini.
Yes.
He was saying it would be ideal that, like, for instance, today, if he was leaving the conference, if he could point his phone as a taxi's approaching, and that would let him know it's there. How close are we to that?
Hey, we're pretty close. So Gemini is powering a lot of our accessibility offerings these days. Things like auto-generated alt text. So even just navigating the web on Chrome, where there's these millions of unlabeled images, Gemini helps create image labels and alt text for all of those images, even on websites that aren't Google. So just allowing a more accessible experience on the web in general. So Lookout is one of those things that will let you, you know, point your phone at different objects and identify them for you, kind of as your colleague was saying. And in that respect, we're there. Gemini has a lot of amazing things on the horizon for us, and we're really excited for applications in the accessibility space.
And in terms of the conference itself, what else are you looking forward to seeing and hearing about?
I was just chatting with some folks about the accessible gaming initiative through RNIB. That's really exciting to me. So I have multiple sclerosis. So I don't have sight loss, but my mobility is impaired and my motor control is impaired as well. I'm not a gamer, but my wife is. So being able to play with her and take advantage of some of those options is really cool for me. And I'm excited to chat with those folks later.
Wish you lots of luck with the speech later.
Thank you so
this
much.
Is your first time in Glasgow as well?
It is. It's my first time in Scotland. I've really been enjoying it. We went exploring in the Highlands. We explored downtown Glasgow. We went to the Absent Ear. It's been really an amazing experience, and everyone's been so kind and helpful. I've loved it here.
Google's NM Dayton, thanks for your time on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. We are here at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference, talking technology, of course, and one of the big topics is navigation. And joining me now is Neil Barnfather, MBE from GoodMaps. Neil, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about what GoodMaps is for the listeners that do not know?
Of course. So GoodMaps is a computer vision-powered navigation solution for smartphones, so iPhone and Android. And it provides turn-by-turn, real-time navigation through complex indoor spaces. So think train stations, airports, shopping malls, that sort of thing.
Big topic at the moment with navigation is obviously the indoor navigation especially. So what's new with GoodMaps currently? What's some of the latest features that have been added in, you know, the last year or so.
So I think some of the really exciting stuff that's coming both now and also imminently includes the enhancements that we've made in terms of accuracy. So we're now boasting 25 centimeter accuracy just under 70% of the time and 100% of the time under 1 meter. Which, you know, really is beginning to get us to a point where, you know, when we're telling you turn left, when we're telling you an item's on the right and so forth, it's extremely accurate, the ability to track the movement, to position the user and so forth. Some of the sort of more peripheral benefits, obviously, are the enhancements to some of the aspects of the app that just improve the overall inclusion. So we're now supporting 18 languages and counting. You know, those sorts of features and functionality really improve the uptake and the usability by a bigger, broader group. And of course, the more people that can benefit, the more venues want to put it in, which ultimately pulls into the bigger picture that people like ourselves can navigate spaces because more of them are mapped.
When we're talking the kind of modern technology that's around, what sort of modern technologies is Good Maps harnessing at the moment to provide an excellent service for blind and partially sighted people?
So I think, it would be remiss not to mention AI and machine learning. Those are the two fundamental core technologies that sit at the bottom of our computer vision modeling. You know, without computer vision, we would be reliant on technologies that have previously been used, such as Bluetooth beacons, Wi-Fi fingerprinting, and indeed things like visual anchor points, such as QR codes and variations of them. The problem with all of those technologies really are the accuracy that can be determined, or indeed what you can do with it. So a visual anchor point might tell you something such as, well, this is the, you know, maybe the food area. But if you're looking for the platforms or what have you at a train station, you have to go find another visual anchor to scan to understand what that's doing. And the same with beacons and things. So I think the real cutting edge technologies are sort of sitting in that use of AI, ML and the computer vision aspects. And of course, the really nice thing about using those sorts of technologies are that they're backward compatible. So as we improve the deployment and the functionality, it rolls back. So if I think to our earliest deployments in the UK and I look at some of the TransPennine Express stations, what they have today is the same as everyone else has who's maybe just about to go live with such as projects on the London North Eastern Railway and C2C and things like that. So that's really where I sort of see where we are today. And just to touch on sort of forward-looking opportunities, I think the AI in the computer vision space is going to continue to improve as we add things in for the front-facing piece, such as OCR, so the ability to process, okay, I'm in the supermarket, I know I'm standing looking at the toothpaste because that's what I selected, but help me pick up the particular brand and the particular type that I'm looking for. And you know, that sort of thing's really going to get exciting to empower a complete end-to-end journey, not just to the final sort of 25 centimeters, but putting your hand on a product and allowing you to pick it up.
And when it comes to navigation in general, you know, being at the conference at the moment, what sort of themes and patterns have you noticed which you may see pop up in navigation technology over the next few years?
I think it would obviously be remiss again not to touch on, you know, the hands-free wearable type technologies. I think the big barrier to that, we're obviously often asked, I mean, probably 95 times a day, you know, when is it coming to Meta glasses and so forth? We just heard a great speak from Gus about those. But the problem is at the moment the battery performance. So, you know, yes, fundamentally the underlying technologies are there, but the battery life would mean that you'd be sort of able to navigate for 8 minutes and then the battery would be gone. So we need to really remedy some of those things. I think the biggest element, though, of that's coming together really at this sort of event and others is the fact of how amazing the future looks for us and how the technology has finally got to a point where we're able to say that there's an inflection point where we are truly reaching a level of independence and autonomy, which is we've never seen before, frankly. You know, whether it's in navigation in a pure turn-by-turn, real-time directional point, or whether it's having information on the journey, and indeed when you get to where you're going, that means you can do something. It's all well and good arriving, but if I've made it there, now I need to do something. And I think that what's going to be really interesting is the merging of some of those technologies or the combining of them where we can actually do something that not just helps the person get there confidently and comfortably, but also empowers them when they arrive.
Fantastic. Neil Barnfather, MBE from Good Maps, thank you for joining us here at the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you again.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. We appreciate your company. If you've got a comment or question about anything you've heard or anything you'd like to hear, then get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Natalie Curran, Hubert Pavalkovich and Callum Stoneman, until next time, bye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.